Welcome to the SBCN podcast, a production of the Small Business Community Network, brought to you by Brad Poulos, small business coach, entrepreneurship professor, and author of the Small Business Operator's Manual, a guide to running your small business profitably.
Everyone, it's Linda Ockwell-Jenner here again, co-founder of the Small Business Community Network, SBCN for short, and we're continuing with our series of members of the SBCN who are experts in a certain arena, and I'm thrilled to bits to have Andrew Leith back again because he knows so many things. I just could listen to him all day. Hello, Andrew.
Good morning, Linda. How are you? Thank you so much for inviting me in. And it's a pleasure to be able to connect with the SBCN community again.
Yeah, I'm excited because everything you say, I managed to take in. And then I start thinking about it after and think, wow, that's a really good idea. That's a good tip. So I'm thrilled to bits you can come back, Andrew.
Oh, well, that's a huge compliment coming from you. So I appreciate that, Linda.
So what are your thoughts today? What are you going to wow us with today?
Well, I've had a couple of interactions with clients since the new year that have reminded me how important it is to never forget the connection between culture and revenue. And, you know, I just equate it to our own personal lives. When you wake up on the wrong side of the bed, how motivated are you to be excellent that day? And so as leaders, it's important that we ensure that we're helping people to promote getting up on the right side of the bed. So are we doing things that are promoting people's excellence and helping to create spaces for them to rise to any occasion? And I think that's maybe the best topic we could talk about to kick off the new year.
I think that's really lovely because I've got to be honest, even I don't get out on the right side of the bed today, but that's not anybody else's fault. So it's a wonderful topic. Thank you.
Well, and you're so right. We don't always need other people's help to get up on the wrong side of the bed. So if we can do the opposite and inspire someone to have a great day, then, you know, our work as leaders is more fulfilling, I believe.
Yeah, I have to say, from the day I met you until now, I always feel safe in your company and I always feel like you're there for me and you are more interested in the person you're talking to. And I think it's wonderful that the work you're doing because you're helping so many people.
You just brought up a really dear memory to me. My grandfather, I think we were very similar, to be honest. I think he was a lot like me, but people would often tell him in some way, shape, or form that he was interesting. And his response was always, "No, I'm interested."
Oh, wow. And that's exactly like you. Interested. And that, I think, is something that a lot of people in business today, sadly, are not interested. They may be interesting, but it seems to be all about the sale. Carry on then. I'm so ready for this.
No, well, I think you know this. My whole philosophy about sales is relationship building. And if we can't build strong relationships and trust with people, let alone our clients, we're probably not going to have all that much success. And so I realize that sales cycles have changed and the processes have changed with the advent of selling online and digital communication. But I really truly believe that people crave that human interaction and genuinely caring about what's going on in someone's day or being genuinely interested in what they do or their passions can really evolve a conversation and leapfrog a number of meaningless conversations. And so I tend not to talk about products when I'm selling. I tend to talk about the people that I'm selling them to, understanding their lives, their needs, their fears, their pains, and then seeing how that product can connect with them. Because I've always felt that, you know, there's a saying that says, people know what they want to buy, but they actually buy for emotional reasons. And so if you can't connect a customer with an emotional reason to purchase your product, you're dead in the water. And, you know, I've said that to people and they challenge me, oh, well, I sell IT products. How passionate or emotional are you going to get about IT products? But you can talk about the frustrations that people incur when their IT products aren't working properly. And if you can draw that parallel between the emotions that they're having when they need your product, you probably have a customer.
So you use the word culture.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a different way to look at culture, isn't it? Because most people think it's about, you know, where you were born, what kind of, you know, food you like to eat, what religion you are. So this is a really good take on a different kind of culture. What made you think about this, Andrew?
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point, and I'm glad you drew the parallel there because I think it's important to differentiate. Although I believe that the cultures are the same, they're just based on the environment. So if I come from Scotland, I might eat haggis. I might enjoy long walks on a rainy day. There's all sorts of cultural things that are intrinsic to the geographic location of where that culture exists. Think of a company as exactly the same. My company creates a culture, whether I know it or not. And that's not only in the way that people interact. And so I've developed what I call the three pillars or three P's of culture. And that's people, process, and product. And so let's start with people. I talk to solopreneurs or small businesses all the time and say, we don't have a culture. We're only three people. Well, how kind are you to yourselves as three bosses existing in an office who are all in a position of authority? Are you being nice to yourself? Are you creating a safe space for yourself to be most excellent? Or are you pushing yourself to the limit? And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, I've worked with a number of large multinational software companies, and there's often a disconnect between upper management and the culture beneath. And they don't realize that that disconnect is actually perpetuating a negative culture. And so I always say that communication is such a huge part of creating that people pillar and ensuring that people understand at all levels that they're involved in the communication and that they're heard.
Oh, well, I wish a lot of the larger organizations thought like you. My thoughts on this is a lot of startups are very much like you are talking about, and they care about each other. They care about the culture, if somebody's happy, if somebody's being heard. And as the organization grows, I've seen so many, I'm going to say toxic elements come into those organizations because it's all about the money.
Right.
And if we think about the people first, not only will we retain the best employees, if we think about the people first, they'll have good health and they'll offer more of their experiences and be more open. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. If you feel like you're in a safe space where you're encouraged and empowered to be your most excellent, are you not going to want to provide that heightened level of service, or are you not going to feel a higher level of accountability to the projects that you're working on? And I think you've actually just created a perfect segue into the second pillar, which is process, because you're right. I'm in a startup. I'm injecting resources back into ensuring that my team's mental health is safe, that my team's enjoying their job, that I'm right-sizing the roles for the people. But am I creating processes that are going to stand the test of time? So have I created processes that support the five people in my office as a startup? Or am I starting to think about what it's going to look like when I have 10, 20, 50, 100, 1,000 employees? Yeah. And this is where people who are really conscious of people culture lose scope of the fact that process can absolutely destroy people culture just as much as a poor people culture. And so one of the things that I talk about with startups, because I am heavily involved in the area with startups at Communitech and the Accelerator Center and working with small startups to ensure that they understand that you are going to run into these roadblocks. It's not a if, it's a when. Mm-hmm. And if you don't start thinking about these things now, you might take the power out of your hands. So I think your example is perfect. You've got a local startup passionate about the people that work with them, but also passionate about growing their company and reaching as many people as they can to affect as much change as they can on the world. So they get approached by other companies who want to help them grow. Maybe they're approached by equity and they're purchased. If they don't have a strong pillar of process that is already functioning, that will be stripped away from that company and a new process will be added in and it won't care about the people. And I worked in equity for years. And as much as I learned amazing things, the one thing that I also learned is money loves ones and zeros. It doesn't really care about the people. And I've seen companies maximize their valuation while also destroying the internal cultures of those organizations. And I try to help my clients to realize that they can have both. You just have to start the strategy as early as possible, just like you would with your process strategy.
Mm-hmm. You are making such an impression and improving so many people's lives by being part of this community in particular, where we all live and work, because what you say is being passed on, Andrew. How you say it is very important. And people now are listening to you and passing on your words of wisdom. And I'm hoping against hope that more people hear you so that, you know, they can think more about the people culture. Because we sometimes think, oh, well, you know, they give us a good salary. You know, they may give us, I don't know, time off, holidays and stuff like that. But if you don't care about the people. And what is the third one? We've got one more, have we? Another pillar we've got.
The third one is product. And I definitely want to talk about that. But I want to take this opportunity to speak directly to anyone that's listening and understand that I'm not great or all that different or all that smart. I lived this. I almost died by allowing myself to be pushed by corporate America so hard that something inside me burst. And Linda, you know, that's not a cute little analogy. Something inside me actually burst. I had an emergency surgery to have a large chunk of my intestine removed. Oh. Afterwards, I found out that my cortisol levels were through the roof, and that was most likely related to stress-induced diverticulitis. And so my body lacked the ability to heal while I was too busy putting 100% of myself into an organization that didn't care about me. I was slowly dying inside.
Oh, Andrew, and that's so sad. So sad.
It took that falling off a cliff and hitting the ground hard to realize all of these things that I talk about. So I want anyone who's listening to realize this isn't me standing at some pulpit preaching something I haven't lived or some fancy idea that ChatGPT gave me. I'm passionate about having this conversation because I almost died and had to go through the gambit to realize there's a better way. There's a way that we can do it where we can retain our soul, where we can empower and uplift the people around us and be successful. So one thing that I've learned, your listeners may have heard of it, you may have heard of this before, but I had never up until a couple of weeks ago. It's Ikigai. So Ikigai is a Japanese philosophy about encompassing all of the things about us that make us great into the thing that makes us whole. And so for my life, I took the things that I was really good at and I thought that was my value, and the things I was really passionate about that probably could have affected change on the world was more of like a hobby. And now that I've smashed those things together and have found the faith to be able to speak my true voice and understand that I have value as an analytical executive, but I have just as much or more value as a creative, passionate leader who wants to help other people to grow and learn. And so if anyone's listening and they feel like they have a dichotomy in their life, they have two sides that never shall meet, never shall shake hands, please introduce them. Because when you can bring both of yourselves to that boardroom, you will bring your excellence. You will find parts of you that you didn't even know existed.
That's absolutely wonderful. I'm sure when you tell that story on the stage, your audience are almost in tears because you are such a strong man and you are such a good example of how human should be. And so I'm so happy that you are working towards changing not only how people think, But I think it will go further. I think it will be global eventually. It will be changing people around the globe. So the product part of it's very important, obviously, isn't it? That the product part of it's very important, but
it is. It is. And look at, you know, let's take your startup example, because I think especially in this area, that's such a relevant topic. You've got people that are so invested in a product. So let's say you've got your core five team. They built the product. They built the framework. Other than small ideations or evolutions, the product exists in the way that it does. How are the next 20 employees in that company connected to that product? And now when you've got 1,000 people in that company, how are they connected to that product that was really developed by the initial five founders? And so it's finding ways to allow your employees to have a voice, to bring them into the R&D process, or at least pull back the curtain so that they feel like they're part of that process. Because once we have buy-in, we have accountability. Once we have accountability, we want to be part of something. We want to see it grow. We want to see it flourish. Mm-hmm. If we're just told to have accountability, we all know what that leads to. And so I think there's a lot of leaders telling their teams to be accountable, but not actually showing their teams what that looks like.
You've hit the nail on the head, and it can cause a lot of stress and frustration from, you know, what my clients have told me in the past. For my, you know, as a consultant, a business consultant, the personal side of that person who feels left out and feels more like a machine than somebody who helped build this success of this business. You get where I'm coming from.
100%. 100%. So when you get into large software companies, they begin to silo specific aspects. And I'll just speak of the sales process. Mm-hmm. So you've got a sales executive, but you also have a sales engineer. So the engineer is directly connected to the products. They feel some intrinsic connection to the product because they're involved in a base level. Oftentimes the sales team lacks that connection to the products they're selling. So all they're actually doing is reiterating some verbiage that they were told to speak to customers, rather than actually passionately connecting with that product and being able to explain it in a way that would resonate with anyone. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this time and time again, where salespeople are passionate about the money they're making, they're passionate about the awards they're receiving, but they're not really passionate about the product that they're selling. And I think that's a shortcoming of sales organizations, to not build that internal pride in their sales team to know that they are selling something they're proud of or selling something they understand.
Yeah, that's a great point, Andrew. I think it's something that's not discussed a lot out there, because basically A doesn't want to upset B and B doesn't want to upset C, and everybody needs a paycheck. But this is just amazing. This is why you are a true leader. You are a leader. You are, I'm not going to say this is the right time. We wish that you could have been around, you know, because startups in our area, oh my gosh, I've been in now 30 years in this part of this, you know, where we live, Waterloo region, whatever you want to call it. So startups have been starting here and growing and all the rest of it. And the people part of it is very much, much missed out, which is why I admire you greatly and why your success and your growth is up there now, because you are authentic, you are knowledgeable, but a true leader doesn't say, this is what I think, no, this is what I know you should do, this is what I'm telling you to do. You go through the whole process with people, and it's just wonderful the way you explain it. So the kind of businesses you're working with, they must have a really, really good idea now how to move forward, because basically you also tell it in such a way that I can understand it from a different perspective. So that's quite a gift, isn't it?
It's funny. I think that stems from my time working in IT. And you know, there are people that speak ones and zeros, and there's people that speak English, but there are also some people that sit right in the middle. Yeah. And that's sort of me. Like, I've always been able to explain complex ideas in ways that the person in front of me can understand. And you might not know this, but I actually took communications at Brock University. And so communications was always something I was really passionate about. And one of the things that I learned there very early was, and it's a misconception, I think, people believe communication is what's coming out of your mouth. Uh-huh. Communication is how that is being received by the person that you're trying to explain it to. Wow. And so you can be as eloquent and well-spoken as you want, but if your message doesn't land with your audience, you weren't really all that eloquent. So I truly believe that it's important to make sure that you're explaining things to the audience in a way that they can comprehend, rather than trying to, you know, overspeak everyone because you know a couple of fancy words.
And also, I think we're very alike, and that's why we like and respect each other, because I always say, I don't need a script. I don't need a PowerPoint. I speak from my heart, my lived experiences, and I don't delve into the topics you do, because that's way past me. Seriously. I like to hear about it. I like to be part of it, but I know where my strength comes from and how I can help other people. And in the short time we've known each other, I have seen you actually, when I say growth, it's nice that your business is growing, but you as a business leader that now has more confidence, and you now believe in yourself even more. And so for that, I think that's absolutely wonderful, because if you believe in yourself, other people believe in you.
You're bang on. And that is culture. Like, that's culture. The people in a position of, I don't want to say authority, because I don't think it's authority, but the people, there's always a few people in an organization that people look up to. And those are usually the trendsetters or the culture setters. And so people will emulate how the people that they respect in an organization carry themselves. And so I think it's hugely important for leaders to set the example. And I absolutely appreciate that you've noticed an evolution in me, and I have as well. And I think part of it is finding this center. So in the past, I may have been feigning excellence because I wanted it so bad. Now I do truly believe in the message that I'm speaking, and I just talk. And if it has value for people, that warms my heart. And if not, I hope they find something else of value in their day.
But it's about authenticity, whether it's you or people in these organizations or people on the street, anywhere really. If we're authentic and believe in ourselves and other people believe in us, and we are talking the truth and we're not reading just from somebody else's book or AI, and you are truly authentic and amazing. And this is why I'm so happy you're our leadership expert for the SBCM, because it's a joy being in your presence. It really is. Now, a couple of words of wisdom to leave us with, please, so we can, you know.
Yeah, let's try to sum all of this up into one cohesive statement. Very simply, culture and revenue are intrinsically connected. Culture is not how good your employees feel about the activities you're providing for them or the free lunches you're bringing in. Culture is your people, your process, and your product all working in tandem for the best results. And the one thing that I will say is, challenge your assumptions about your culture and you will find an opportunity for improvement.
Wow. This is wonderful. I know that you got really busy today. This is why we have to stop there. But I'm looking forward to seeing you again in February. We're in January now, aren't we?
We are 2026. It's been a whirlwind.
It's been a whirlwind. Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing you in February with more words of wisdom. And thank you for your time. I really
absolutely
appreciate it.
Always. And thank you to the SBCN community. Always appreciate supporting you in any way I can. And Linda, it's always a pleasure. Welcome to 2026. Let's make it the best one yet.
It is going to be brilliant. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Cheers. You as well.